Sailing in Maine. There are so many ways to get out on Maine's legendary sailing grounds. The idea of sailing in Maine means different things to different people. For some, it's the thrill of a high school sailing competition, with young sailors in dry suits braving gusty spring weather to test their skills. For others, sailing means taking a sunfish onto a Maine lake or pond on a lazy summer day. Some dream of cruising the spectacular Egamoggin Reach on a yacht. Others save up for a windjammer vacation or remember their outward bound adventure. Whatever sailing means to you, there is no question it is a quintessential Maine summer activity. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss all the different ways one can get involved in sailing in Maine. And we'll learn more about the tall ships coming to Maine this weekend as part of Schooner Fest. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. On a beautiful day like today, what could be better than setting sail off the coast of Maine or maybe on one of the state's many lakes? But what if you've never sailed, or what if you're an experienced sailor looking for a new adventure? Today, you're in luck, because our topic is sailing in Maine. From how to get started to the tall ships coming this weekend. With me in our studio, Michael McAllister, who is Executive Director of Sail Maine. Maddie Oates is Program Director at Tall Ships Portland. And Curtis Rindlob is the author of A Cruising Guide to the Maine Coast, also the Maine Coast Guide for Small Boats. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a sailor? If so, where's your favorite place to sail? Have you always wanted to sail but have yet to get your feet wet? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to you all. And I think I want to start just by asking each of you how you got into sailing, because in my experience, people who are passionate about sailing usually have a little bit of a story behind it. So, Maddie, I'm starting with you. How did you get into sailing?
It began, I was 18. I'd never stepped on foot on board a boat before then, although I drew them growing up constantly, tall ships, everything. But I went hitchhiking abroad for about 5 months, came back even more broke than when I started, and I needed a job. So I had the choice between two kind of, could be a librarian, which I got, and I got this job on board this boat called the Clearwater, which is a tall ship started by Pete Seeger back in the late 60s and actually built up here in Maine at the Harvey Gammon Shipyard. And I thought sailing sounded pretty cool. And I hadn't even stepped on board yet, and I saw just the topmast, just the top kind of 30 feet, and I fell in love. That was it.
So 18, that summer job turned into?
Oh, that summer job turned into a decade and a half of professional tall ship work, both coasts over in Europe and a lot of fascinating places.
Funny how life goes. What about you, Curtis? How did you become a sailor?
I was lucky enough to have a father who wanted to be a sailor. So I have very early memories of him coming down the staircase, carrying his sail bags on a weekend day, and I would go and run and hide because I found it so incredibly boring. He had learned to sail from a book, and he had a small boat called Scared Stiff, which was a very aptly named boat, and we had many misadventures aboard that boat. And I became hooked the first summer when he chartered a little boat to sail overnight. And I just couldn't believe how fun it was to sleep on this rocking boat. And we sailed around Long Island Sound. I was 8 then.
So it wasn't the sailing but the sleeping that hooked you.
And the exploring. We went to some fun places. I remember rolling down sand dunes in Port Jefferson, New York, and hitting a restaurant in Branford, Connecticut, and being absolutely amazed that the entire room was rocking because I had sort of sailor sea legs. And I remember thinking, oh, this is just like a pirate ship. And from that point on, I couldn't get enough of it.
Okay, Michael, your turn.
First of all, thank you for having us on the show. And this topic is really important, I think, for Maine. So thank you for featuring this. I think... was duct taped to a mast at 6 months old by my parents. They just wanted to get out on the water, and I had to go. And I didn't like it, kind of like you. It was like a little scary. I would hide in my life jacket like a little turtle. But I grew up in Biddeford Pool, and I just kept hanging out at the docks at the Biddeford Pool Yacht Club. And they had a scholarship program, and I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to learn to sail when I was 12, and started sailing all summer. Then I started teaching right away. Two summers in, I started teaching sea fleas, the little five-year-olds.
And sea fleas.
Yeah, what
I
a
like
cool
that.
Name,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And turnabouts. It would be me and, you know, two or three other little kids. At the same time, I was light enough and kind of like malleable enough that adults would take me racing. And I fell in love with racing in my early teens. And fortunate enough that I just get, okay, you're coming with us this weekend. And I got learned a lot doing that. I went on and sailed in college and coached in college, and now I'm director at Sail Maine.
And you said sailed and coached in college, so you were a racer.
Yes, yeah, that's predominantly my favorite thing to do. I think everybody that sails, you know, we all share similar love of the ocean. But for me, that's my real passion is racing sailboats and helping other people learn to do that.
Okay. Well, you know, we have such a variety of guests here because you all represent everything from folks who can race to maybe giving people a sense of the historic heritage. We're doing this show this week as opposed to another week because there's a big event this weekend. Why don't you tell me about it, Maddie?
We do. We have our first annual Schooner Fest. We thought it would be a great idea to bring a bit of heritage back to Maine. In the sense of not just the schooners that populate the coast, but also the fact that a lot of times these schooners would race back in the day, and that which is an exciting thing to pitch them against each other. And again, they're all different designs, and they're all different shapes and sizes. But there's the old saying, when you have two boats headed in one direction, it's a race.
So, so Schooner Fest is this weekend in Portland, in Casco Bay.
That's right.
And how many tall ships and where are they coming from?
We're going to have five schooners. Three of them are hometown boats. We've got the Bagheera and Wendamene from the Portland Schooner Company that you see out sailing every day on Casco Bay. We've got the Harvey Gamage, run by Ocean Passages. And then we've also got the Schooner Adventure and the Schooner Alert. Alert's coming from Bailey Island. Actually, they're all coming from Sail Boston, which is going on this week. A massive fleet of 40 ships down in the harbor. But we're going to grab a few of them as they come past us. And from the 24th and 25th of this weekend, we're going to be having up to three races a day out on the harbor and then some sunset cruises at night. So these are open to the public. It's a chance for people who have always wanted to get on board and not only just go for a sail, but maybe pitch themselves against some other boats.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. I saw that one can not only get on board to tour them when they're docked in the harbor, but get out on the water on them. Is that filled up or are there still spots available?
There are a few spots. For better or worse, we are selling sails out, which is great. So the tickets are going quickly. My phone's lighting up like a rock concert kind of the last few mornings every time we get a ticket in, which is great. But that does mean they are going quickly. And if you get the tallshipsportland.org, we're selling tickets there. The sunset sails are really popular. The races are really popular, but it's a chance to get a different side of tall ship sailing.
Okay, Curtis, I invited you on because you are the co-author of a book that anybody who sails the coast of Maine probably has on board. Really kind of the Bible of sailing the coast of Maine, which is a cruising guide to the Maine coast, first written in 1988 by Hank and Jan Taft. When you came on board to revise and rewrite this book, did you travel to every place mentioned in the guide?
Tricky question. yes, for the most part. I have not been to some of the furthest upriver anchorages in some parts of the coast, but predominantly every harbor, yes.
So I was going to say dozens, but hundreds.
Over 500.
Over 500. Okay, I'm going to ask you the question you don't want to be asked, but I want to know, where's your favorite place to sail in Maine?
I get to ask that question a lot, and I have a dodgy answer. I like a lot of them. And what I find is that they are different each time I go, which makes them new every time I go. Depending on who you're with, depending on the weather, whether the sun is shining or not, depending on who you happen to bump into or who's friendly or who isn't.
Okay, what's your favorite today?
You're going to pin me down. I don't really have a favorite.
Oh, my gosh.
I love them all.
Okay.
My preference, and I think it's reflected in the book, and I believe it was Hank and Jan's Taft's preference as well, are the more remote anchorages where you feel like you have the coast to yourself. And fortunately, in Maine, we have a lot of those. So it's an ideal cruising ground.
Michael, you mentioned that you grew up sailing in Biddeford Pool through a scholarship program, and now you run Sail Maine, which also has a lot of scholarships. I know that throughout, up and down the coast of Maine, there are sailing programs either through the Extension Service, yacht clubs, the YMCA, sailing programs. Why do you think it's important to get kids out on the water and to learn how to sail? I mean, let's face it, most kids aren't going to grow up and be able to afford their own sailing yacht when they grow up.
Right. I think there are a bunch of reasons. The biggest one is that it's a way to learn life skills. So for young kids that come on and try to learn how to sail and eventually learn how to sail, the first thing is you can learn how to overcome some fears. A lot of us, it's the first time getting on a water, a boat. It's totally new. So you learn how to handle new environments, new activities. That's a great skill that you can use for the rest of your life. It's also a place where you can meet new people. I meet people all the time that through sailing, and they say, oh, I'm so happy to see so-and-so again because I haven't seen them since the last time we sailed together. Some of my fondest friends are from growing up sailing. I still see them today, and we do things together. So it's a way to form bonds and connections to your community. And it's also, sailing, I think, is such a science-based sport that it's a good opportunity to teach some science-type activities, how do sails work, how does weather work, how do we manipulate sails. It's an important science-based skill. So those are some of the big things why sailing is important.
What do you think is the ideal age to get a kid started sailing?
Wow, that is a very, very tough question. We offer sailing at the age of 5. It's a program called Little Luffers. But that's not right for everybody. And I think some people feel that 10, 11 is a better age to start. Even 8, 9, 10, I think that's a really good age. It depends on the kid, right? If the kid's outgoing or interested in it, really about interest. If they're really interested in it, then it's good for them. Some people, they don't want to learn until they're 50. And we offer that at Sail Maine, too. We do adult lessons. It really depends on interest. And it's a lifelong sport. So you can learn late in life and enjoy it, or you can learn early in life and do it for your entire life.
How interesting that you offer lessons for folks who are well into adulthood.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Let me ask you, Maddie, I know that you've got a big event this weekend with the Schooner Fest, but your organization is also dedicated to education. What do you offer?
That's right. We do one-week voyages at sea, and the whole idea is just to give people a brand-new environment to learn in. We're big on experiential education, although not many people know that because people know us through events, the Tall Ship Festival, Schooner Fest. So we're giving them a chance to get offshore, be put back at square one, because it's the great equalizer. There's no one who starts with a leg up on board a tall ship. Even if you know how to sail, it's a whole new environment. So you're out of your element, you're helped along by a professional crew, and you go on these one-week voyages here in the Gulf of Maine. We've got some going up in the Gulf of St. Lawrence as well. And you are slowly coached into operating these magnificent towers of sail yourself. And the best part about it is thanks to Falmouth High School and the Falmouth School District, it's also accredited for high schoolers. So for kids 14 through 18, they come out for a week and they come away with an elective semester credit too.
Okay. Just for teenagers? Grown-ups can't go?
I'll tell you, that is the most popular question of all. Nearly every parent we had last year in our program always came up afterwards and said, so how do I do this? So we are trying to create a program for adults as well, because there are just as many that want the same opportunity, the same experience as their children. So stay tuned, because we are looking at creating that.
Okay. Curtis, I want to talk to you a little bit about the popularity of sailing in Maine. My sense is, and you can tell me if this is true, that during the economic slump, we saw a reduction in sailing. That Maine wasn't the place it had been. Is that true? And is it coming back?
I think you're correct. That's very much true. The economic downturn of 2008 really knocked the knees out from under the boat building business in Maine and elsewhere. It's a fragile business because it's discretionary income predominantly. And you could, on the coast, you could definitely sense there were a lot fewer boats out cruising, recreational boats. I think there's some amount of rebound happening now, which is very encouraging. But we are at a point in perhaps the overarching sweep of boating itself where a lot of people don't find they have the time for doing this. It's a certain commitment if you own a boat to maintain it and commit to that kind of a vacation year in and year out. And I think with two-income families, that's becoming harder and harder. With people with kids who are in schools that start back to school earlier each year, it seems, that also cuts the season short.
When your kids were little, you sailed with them for the summer, didn't you?
They grew up on the boat, pretty much, yes.
And is that what you did as well, Michael? Did you grow up on the boat?
No. It was more of a hop on the boat for the afternoon or for
okay.
the day. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the introduction of young people to boating is absolutely vital and probably has been too neglected generally so that there, to me, it seems like there just aren't enough new people getting into boating or at least cruising on a serious enough level to want to own a boat. I've heard also that Windjammer tours are cutting the length of their tours back from, say, week-long tours to 3 or 4 day tours because people don't find or don't want to commit to having that block of time to sail.
Yeah, I'm hearing this about other sports as well. Folks who, run the fishing camps in northern Maine talk about the same thing, that we just don't have the vacation time that we used to. Modern life is different. So this is why you're counting on Michael and Maddie in programs like that
to
sort of put the bug right back into the next generation of sailors. We are going to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Wainfleet, the kind of school that teaches a student, not a class. Learn more at wainfleet.org. By CEI, helping grow good jobs and shared prosperity with financing, business expertise, and policy solutions. CEIMaine.org. And by the Davis Family Foundation, proud to support Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical through the Charting a Bold Future campaign.
Next time on The World, protecting America's shores. Members of the U.S. Coast Guard have 95,000 miles of coastline to protect, and they have to be ready for anything.
We have mounted automatic weapons on our vessels. That deters a lot of threats, I believe.
We ride along with the Coast Guard and update all the news on the next edition of The World.
And you can hear that broadcast this afternoon at 3 p.m. With the Maine Public Classical Channel, classical music is alive and well in many areas of our state. Virtually 24/7 great classical music on our growing network. And if you can't hear it over the air, remember that it's on the HD channel of the station that you're listening to right now. And it's also available online at mainepublic.org in a stereo stream. Over the air on regular FM, Maine Public Classical is heard on 5 FM frequencies, in Portland at 104.1, in Bangor 106.1, Waterville at 99.7, Freiburg-Bridgeton at 91.5, and in the Millbridge MDI area at 93.7 FM. Maine Public Classical, how to find it and listen to it. You'll find all the information online at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Setting Sail in Maine. With me in the studio, Curtis Rindlob is co-author of the most recent editions of A Cruising Guide to the Maine Coast. The guide was first written by Hank and Jan Taft in 1988. He's also written the Maine Coast Guide for Small Boats. Michael McAllister is here. He's the executive director of Sail Maine. And Maddie Oates is program director for Tall Ships Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. With us now, Meg Maiden. She is Marketing Director for the Maine Windjammer Association. Meg, welcome to Maine Calling, and tell us a little bit about the Windjammer Association.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's great to be here. This year is actually our 40th anniversary. The association was established back in 1977 by a group of sea captains who thought it was time to put their heads together and work together to promote the industry a little farther and wider than it had been. And today there are 9 privately owned and operated windjammers in the fleet. They range in size and age, and we have 1 ketch and 8 schooners. They all were built to carry different kinds of cargo, including the 3 newest ones that were built to carry people. And together we represent the largest fleet of working sailing vessels in the country.
I understand there are windjammers in Rockland and Camden and Portland, correct?
That's right. Yep. The Midcoast Fleet is the group that I work with the Maine Windjammer Association. And, 3 work out of Camden and the other 6 out of Rockland.
So what is a windjammer cruise in addition to an opportunity to get out on the water in Maine?
Well, it is a great opportunity to get on the water. There certainly are lots of ways to do that. It's, I guess, a great way to step back in time. Maybe that's a different way to position it. These vessels are, based on 19th-century designs. There are no winches, no modern electronics other than safety equipment. And so they're being operated the same way that they would have been 100 years ago. And that's pretty unique. Guests get to participate in that if they like. And then, of course, the captain and crew, have honed their skills and will pass them on to the next generation.
I don't know if you're able to hear the beginning of the show, Meg, but Curtis was talking about how people don't have the time that they used to for vacation. Are you indeed finding some of those windjammer cruises that are shorter in time more popular than they used to be?
Yes. Our whole windjammer tradition started with week-long trips, and that was definitely the norm. And then probably 20 years ago, it became apparent that people didn't want to take that long or couldn't take that long away from work. So we've been offering shorter and shorter trips, 3, 4, and 5-day trips. We still do have the 6-day trips. And, they're wonderful. You really get a chance to totally immerse yourself in the experience and see that much more. But we do pack a lot into a 3- and 4-day trip as well.
Well, Meg, thanks so much for calling in. Meg Maiden, Marketing Director for the Maine Windjammer Association. And we're going to go to the other calls now. We'll start with Chris calling from Portland. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I'm calling as a representative from the Gulf of Maine Ocean Racing Association, and just wanted to take a moment to thank you for doing this show and thank your guests for coming on and plug our organization if we could. We exist to help promote the sport of sailboat racing in Maine, and a huge portion of that mission involves helping people get their own boats into races and people onto boats. That's a lot easier than folks might think, and we can help put folks in touch with the right people.
So, Chris, if someone's interested in learning to race a sailboat but does not have a boat, you can help find somebody who needs a crew?
Absolutely. In fact, it's a common occurrence that boats are going out in races and feeling like they need some more people on board. They just don't have enough folks in their circle of friends to staff the boat appropriately. So if folks are interested in racing, it's as easy as dropping us a line. We have a website, gamora.org. That's G-M-O-R-A. They can email info@gamora.org. And another great way to get on a boat is just to contact your local yacht club. Many of the yacht clubs in the state have weekly races. In fact, down here in Portland, we have, I think, races on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays of every week in the summertime. There's also a number of weekend races that happen.
Okay, Chris, and I invite you to post information about the Gulf of Maine Ocean Racing Association on the Maine Calling Facebook page. We like to use that as a resource. Thanks for your call. We'll move on to Christopher, who is calling from West Gardner. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been sailing my whole life, started in dories, little dinghies, homemade ones mostly, and progressed through racing Holby Cats and sailing small kind of blue water boats kind of all over Maine and Nova Scotia and some other places around the world. My comment is I see so many people these days out in boats, out in sailboats and other boats for that matter, with their only knowledge of navigation being using current modern electronics. And I've seen them fail, and I've rescued people when they have failed. And I hope that more and more people will learn how to use navigational charts and do dead reckoning and always know where they are. So many people don't pay attention where they all are, and those that sail know it's really critical in Maine particularly. So that's my comment, and thanks for doing the show. It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Christopher.
Yeah, I appreciate that comment. The ability to navigate in Maine is critical with our big tides and fog and not-so-soft rocks. And there's a whole gamut of how casually people address that. Everything from stories I've heard of lost sea kayakers that were navigating by a map that was printed on the back of someone's T-shirt to people who are sailing without charts or relying, as Christopher said, on just electronic equipment. That typically you should always have the charts on a boat, even if you do have a chart plotter or GPS. Apparently, the government thinks the chart plotters are becoming so reliable that they are beginning to talk about phasing out paper charts altogether, and that having the electronic charts is adequate for the requirement that we do have to have paper charts on board. So that's changing sort of in the direction that Christopher was arguing against. But he's absolutely correct that electronic equipment on a wet or damp sailboat is vulnerable.
If there's a ray of light, it's the Navy has gone back to teaching Celestial Nav after like a 8-year hiatus, so that may be coming back around.
Yeah. And I'm guessing the kids on the teenagers learn Celestial Navigation when they're on a tall ship cruise with you.
It's part of the programming and same thing, navigating on a paper chart, and that's how we take the idea of this, not just sailing, but it's taking mathematics and applying it to calculating set and drift. And in fact, one of our interns just came back from a semester at sea where they weren't allowed to look at the GPS positions at all during their trip from Gran Canaria to the Caribbean. So they were doing dead reckoning the entire time and Celestial Nav, and they just, you know, obviously their watch officers were checking how close they were, but they didn't ever get that double check the entire voyage across.
Yeah, and learning to use paper charts as a part of our adult programming, you know, we don't want people out on the water not knowing how to get home. So using a compass and a chart is an important part of being safe on the water.
Christopher, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to South Harpswell and Tom. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yes. Not many people know about the Harpswells, which are two beautiful peninsulas that stick out south into Casco Bay just below Brunswick, about 13 miles from Bowdoin College. And I'm looking out over Harpswell Harbor, dotted with lobster boats, sailboats, protected deep water, and easy access to several of the hundreds of islands that dot Casco Bay. And those islands act as a terrific natural breakwater. So even when the wind picks up, the waves stay low, and you can have a very pleasant sailing experience in a wide variety of conditions here. And there's plenty of marinas. There's a public boat launch at Potts Point and another at Lookout Cove for boats. Trailerable boats can have access to sailing around Harpswell, which is, in my opinion, one of the more beautiful places in Maine and on Earth.
Well, Tom, you are a great advocate for your region. Curtis sailed south around South Harpswell, the Harpswells?
Absolutely. I would fully agree with Tom. Potts Harbor, which is also Harpswell Harbor, is gorgeous. For people who want to just see it by land, head down to Dolphin Marina. They have a wonderful new restaurant, well, newish in the last number of years, and just this stunning view looking south and over out towards Eagle Island and past Jewel Island, and it's really eye-opening.
Tom, thanks so much for calling in. So now I have to read an email from Brigada Whether or not you're up for the challenge of the Bay of Fundy, there are plenty of ways to experience the magic of the real Down East Coast. I work at the Jonesport Shipyard, and I often hear cruisers call this area the most beautiful place in Maine. Roke Island and its mile-long white sand beach is a popular destination, as is the Cow's Yard, the warm spring-fed mud hole at Great Wass Island, our two lighthouses and a number of small islands. If Moosebeck Reach is on your radar, you can find moorings, showers and laundry, chandlery and repairs at the Jonesport Shipyard. I recommend provisioning at Point South for the best experience. A little competition here. Another spectacularly beautiful place to sail.
See how careful I was about not choosing a harbor? A favorite place. Jonesport, Roke Island, Jonesport area is stunning. It is often, particularly for sailors who come from out of state, that's often considered the sort of holy grail because you've gone up and out into the great unknown of the bold coast of Maine, past Scutic Peninsula. The sailing is stunning. That's the land where you will have a lot of harbors to yourself. The few of the callers mentioned are really neat, fun spots. I would add one in there that's one of my favorites called Mistake Island Harbor, which is right behind Mistake Island, also part of the Great Wass Archipelago right there, which is just to seaward of Jonesport, but absolutely stunning.
We're going to move on to Noah calling from Portland. Hi, Noah. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for putting on this show. Curtis, I'm a big fan of your book and looking forward to the new edition coming out. I'm calling because I'm starting a job in a couple weeks as a deckhand on a tall ship, and I've grown up doing coastal cruising on smaller boats pretty much my entire life, but don't really necessarily know completely what I'm getting into as a deckhand, so I'm wondering if you guys could offer some advice about the critical differences between tall ship sailing and sailing on smaller boats.
Oh, wow. I mean, to be honest, the similarities, they carry right on up depending on the size of the boat. I mean, it's being able to get along on a 30-foot boat or even being able to get along with a two-man laser is the same as being able to get along with your crew on a tall ship. You may be around them a few more hours of the day, but really just the skills that are most important to any tall ship sailor, to any sailor in general, I think, whether you're cruising or whatever, is the ability to get along. When you hear people talk about hiring, they don't talk about the skills. I mean, you can learn whatever. What we know, you can learn. But you can't teach someone how to be a good shipmate. So that's the big thing, is being able to let small things slide, being able to recognize when people are having a bad day or a good day and being there for them.
Yeah, I think that all the same principles apply, right? So the sails are going to work pretty much the same. The lines are going to – you're going to pull a line that's going to have an impact on a sail.
Yeah.
I think with the bigger the boat, the more coordination it takes to make a maneuver, right? So if you're an Optimist or a Luff, a Frosty or a Laser one-person boat, you do it all, and you coordinate every move. But if you want to try to tack or jibe in a tall ship, it's got to take a lot more of this guy's got to do his job and this guy's got to do his job. So teamwork becomes really important.
All right. Well, Noah, good luck with your new job.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to Sam on Facebook. I am currently a 21-year-old about to enter my senior year at UMaine. I love sailing, getting on the water. My family had a sunfish, and we usually sailed our camp on Swan Lake. However, I am dying to get out on the open ocean. What advice would your guests give to someone young with some college loans and wanting to get into the sport?
So, I mean, this is what we do at SailMaine. Our mission is to provide affordable access to the water through community sailing and educational programming. We kind of do the southern region. There are some community boating centers in Rockland, I think. And that's a really great way to get access to the water. We have learned to sail. We talked about it for adults, but we also do rentals. So if you're competent, you can rent a boat. And I believe that's the case at almost every community center. You can get access to inexpensive boats on the ocean.
Are you part of an association? Is there some place people can go to find out what's closest to them?
So I would just say start with our website because we've got a lot of resources, sailmaine.org. And then the next place I would probably go is U.S. Sailing. They have a list of community boating centers there. And if you go from community boating, the next kind of thing, it would be a yacht club or a marina. They may do rentals or provide lessons. So.
And don't just assume that a yacht club called a yacht club is a place that will not help you.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. A lot of yacht clubs are affordable for anybody. And some of these places are looking for new members. You know, they're excited. Our yacht clubs in our region are excited about what we're doing because we are providing the new membership for them. People that enjoy boating, people that want to, you know, volunteer and help out the club. So there are a lot of opportunities both at community boating centers and yacht clubs for people that are energized.
Unfortunately, we have to take another break, but it will be short. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art. Always free and open to the public. And Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
A border wall with Mexico was a rallying cry for Donald Trump during the campaign. But now that he's president, he's confronting a diplomatic wall.
On the future of U.S.-Mexico bilateral relations, there's no question that we're hitting a bit of turbulence in our journey together.
Beyond the Border, the future of U.S.-Mexico relations, next time on America Abroad.
And that broadcast is upcoming at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Sherman Alexie talks about his new memoir about growing up on a reservation in Washington State where poverty and violence were routine. It's also about how he got off the reservation and his conflicted feelings about his parents. And it's about his brain. He had brain surgery when he was 5 months old and again in 2015. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 p.m.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Sailing in Maine. Joining me today, Maddie Oates, who is Program Director for Tall Ships Portland. Curtis Rindlob is the co-author of A Cruising Guide to the Maine Coast and the author of The Maine Coast Guide for Small Boats. And Michael McAllister is Executive Director of Sail Maine. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Curtis, before the break, we were talking about getting into sailing for the first time. And let's face it, a lot of people are kind of intimidated by the idea. It seems kind of scary and expensive.
Yes, I would love to emphasize, as Michael did, that the world of boating from the outside probably seems very exclusive and very out of reach financially for a lot of people. But I would encourage your listeners to realize that it can be very accessible and that they shouldn't hesitate to stop into yacht clubs, boat yards, ask around. And if they're bitten by the bug, there is just an incredible excess of boats for sale. So they're incredibly inexpensive right now. Bargains of my lifetime for sure. So it is doable if there's a will. There can be a way.
We're going to go to Old Town and Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to put a plug in for some friends of mine. They own a beautiful schooner in Rockland called Kukla, and they do charter trips. You can do overnights or just day sails. It's Bev and Ted Cowan. They're the captains, and they're really nice people, and it's a very gorgeous boat, and I highly recommend it.
Sounds
beautiful,
great.
Around Rocklands, and they're just, yeah.
Kathy, so. I'd recommend and ask you to go onto the Maine Calling Facebook page and put the information there so people can use that as a resource, and thank you for calling. Got to move on to Camden and Barry. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. Good afternoon. So I have I'm actually one of the Windjammer captains who works with Meg Maiden, who you were talking with earlier. And one of the things I wanted to tell folks mostly was that sailing is quite affordable. It is easy to get out there. We have had our schooner for the past 25 years, and every person who's been aboard with me is now at they own some piece of that experience. They own some part of that boat. And we have people who come back year after year, and this is their boat. And it's a whole lot cheaper than having to buy your own boat. I take care of all the maintenance. We take care of all the cooking. Their beds are made when they arrive. And every trip is a completely unique experience. We have no itinerary, and we get out there. So I would, again, you know, kind of shamelessly hawk the Windjammer experience as a way to own a piece of history, you know, to be a part of that, to be a part of, you know, a vessel that you can call home. Like I say, I have people who've been sailing with me for 25 plus years, and the Maine coast is where they come to explore, and there's no other way to see the Maine coast than out there. You know, when the people drive through Camden or any of the coastal towns, they haven't seen anything yet, but it's when you get out on the bay that you really begin to see the beauty of what the Maine coast really looks like. You see it the way Champlain did back in the early 1600s in many cases. Believe it or not, you can hide a 125-foot schooner on the Maine coast. At least for me, four nights out of five, I can be the only one in an anchorage. Although I was at a little island last summer, and a fella come up in a boat. I think his name was Curtis, and he joined my lobster picnic. But so, if that sounds familiar, Curtis.
Sure does. Those were great lobsters.
I thought I had that island to myself. Yeah. There comes this boat.
Oh, I think that's a good idea, Curtis. Just track down the Windjammers and invite yourself along for the picnic. That's a great plan. No. Barry, thanks so much for calling.
Oh, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
But that's a great example of the kind of serendipity that happens on the coast. And I can't thank Barry enough. And really have to give all the Windjammer captains a big plug. They work so hard. I see them shuttling their guests back and forth to beautiful beaches, putting on these elaborate cookouts, packing it all up, tucking them in, taking them off to another harbor, then pulling out the fiddles and mandolins and playing music for them at night. It's just an unbelievable amount of work and, of course, a phenomenal experience.
We're going to go to Cumberland and Valerie. Hi, Valerie. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and this is a great topic. I just want to put in a plug for, for Women Under Sail, which is an organization that's run out of South Freeport, and they run short courses, three-day courses for women, women. And I had the experience of growing up learning to sail, really basically being forced to sail, and learning how to capsize and all that, and then didn't do it for probably 20 years until I moved to Maine. And Women Under Sail was a great chance to sort of to rekindle all of my long lost skills and to begin to rebuild my confidence, which has been rebuilding and through a lot of trial and error and fun. It brings back for me back that spirit of childhood. And you know, the other part that's so critical for me is being out in the ocean and appreciating what we have here in Maine and having a perspective that is so different than being on the land. And, you know, I wish everybody could. And it's great to hear you guys talk about the accessibility, because when we know what's in the ocean and how it's changing, it just makes it that much more precious to all of us. Thank you.
Valerie, thanks for calling in and letting us know about Women Under Sail. I appreciate it. We have an email from Lenny. Can I put in a word for Rockland is a wonderful place to sail and hang out? There's Rockland Community Sailing for young people, opportunities to rent and charter boats, three marinas, Hamilton Marine Supplies, and most anything you might need. Rockland Yacht Club with open memberships and a launch service that covers the harbor. And, of course, Penobscot Bay and the Downeast Islands at the harbor's front door. Rockland is a happening place. We'll go to one. Let's see. We'll go to the call from Bath and Joel. Hi, Joel. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Just couldn't resist calling. I was a mate on Stephen Tabor the first year that Jim Sharp owned her. First time sailing, though, in the very beginning of your program, there was discussion of when was your first time sailing. Are you there?
Yep.
Yeah. My mother said, they're filling up that dam behind behind Lake Mead, and I think I'll put my boat on a railroad car in Newcastle, Maine, and take it to Las Vegas. So that's what she did, and that's where I did my first sailing was, I think I was three, 1947, and so I sailed on Lake Mead, and then I got dropped into Christmas Cove and learned to sail in a turnboat.
A little more scenic in Maine, right?
Yeah, and the wind blows not straight down like it does in Nevada. It'll blow off the mountains, and it'll blow straight down. So it makes it a little exciting. But, yeah, really a wonderful program. Just had to call and check in. I've worked out of Camden and raced boats in Maine, the Chesapeake, and San Francisco. But the Maine, coast of Maine is where I cut my teeth.
All right, Joel, thank you for calling and sharing. We're going to move on to Yarmouth and Four. Hi, Four, go ahead.
Hi, great program, enjoying it. Really want to second what Valerie said. So what's on my mind is I've sailed since I was little. I'm kind of an enthusiastic novice, but it's a lot of it's been on lakes. So what should someone like me do to understand sailing here in Casco Bay, like tides? I have no clue. I mean, I can look at charts, but is there a program? And the other thing is, any advice on chartering in this area?
Sure. Maybe I can take a stab at this. So in terms of tides and currents, that is that's one of the most tricky and probably scariest things when you're sailing in Maine. I grew up in Biddeford Pool. There's a tiny little gut that, 4 knots of current rip through that, and there are back eddies going at a knot and a half or 2 knots. And honestly, I think looking at a chart, speaking with someone that's experienced, and trying it out is really the best way to get there.
How do you recommend I find that person?
I would say you come to Sail Maine, and if you know how to sail already, we do clinics on Thursday nights. They're very inexpensive, $25 for people that are have some experience already. And we do special topics each week, and you can ask that instructor, how do you handle currents? Can you give me some examples? We see different currents all around our docks in downtown Portland. Also, if you connect with anybody that does any racing in the area, they will be able to talk to you about, where the current is, where the current isn't. Looking at a chart is really helpful. So those would be my...
Okay. That's great, because I want to be able to go out the boat and take the tiller and not hit anything and come back.
That's always good.
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to Sail Maine. They taught my daughter to sail. The autonomy and the confidence that it gave her are with her still. Kyle and Sophie especially. Kim, who's on deck with you guys now, great organization.
Great. Four, thank you. Thank you. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more comment. This is from Marissa on Facebook. Would love for you to talk about some of the wonderful women-only sailing programs that are offered for women of all ages. Wooden Boat offers a fabulous program that my mom took several years ago after sailing with my father and never truly getting the chance to learn to sail. She loved it and took the class at age 68. So to all of your points, a great last line that it's not ever too late to learn to sail. Thank you all for being here. Michael McAllister, the executive director of Sail Maine, Matthew Oates, program director for Tall Ships Portland, and this weekend is Schoonerfest in Portland. Curtis Rindlob, co-author of A Cruising Guide to the Maine Coast and also the author of The Maine Coast Guide for Small Boats. George Thomas ran the board today. Sam Deeren answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling and our archives at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow, join me for a conversation with author Jonathan White about his new book, Tides, The Science and Spirit of the Ocean. We'll discuss what global warming means for tides, the connection between tides and religion and spirituality, and the role of tidal power as a green energy solution. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.